home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'm wearing my Fadley shirt right now because, bless me, Father, for I've sinned. I've only had one new Fadley's crab cake at the new Lexington Market, and it was, I would have had to stand in line to get a second one. They sent me out with some of that cucumber salad. We're going to be doing that on Friday, the 12th, and again on the 26th. It is 2 to 5 live. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're going to have some scratch-offs to give away. 10 times the cash. I'm going to have some Pac-Mans. Liberty Pure Solutions, which is giving me fresh water on the set, which I'm very appreciative of as well. And our friends at Jiffy Lube Multicare. Bringing it all together, Crab Cake Tour's back out on the road. We're starting at Costas on Tuesday the 9th. We'll be there all morning up until 2 o'clock when I'm going to be like Clark Kent and slip on my Orioles jersey and an ice cold beer that Mr. Costas, he always wants to buy me beer. I'm Ubering home, Mr. Costas. So that's my day. Orioles Red Sox at Costas. Come on by. We'll be there 2 to 5 for the game. Before that, doing Baltimore Positive. This guy came to Pappas with me back in November. And, you know, I've only known him like a minute since like 1986, I think. Maybe 85, I met John Eisenberg at an Orioles game in the press box when I was at the News American or something like that. And he was always the big shot takeout Sunday writer and writing for the APSE Awards and chasing down Joe Don Looney in some shell of a bat cave somewhere in Texas with rattlesnakes. And he's always doing something, and I love him, and he's my mentor in many ways that, you know, I can tell him about, he can believe or not. So much so that I decided not to shave to honor you today, so I get gray bearded up. John Eisenberg is here. He has a new project that he has, you know, it's almost like a total honor that you unleash your project on my programming here at Baltimore Positive. Longtime columnist at the Baltimore Sun and at BaltimoreRavens.com, and author in many ways. And we've been talking Warren Moon and black quarterbacks and Lamar Jackson and NFL history. What do you got up your sleeve, Eisenberg? I hear baseball's coming back from what I hear here in the Charm City.
Yeah, it is. It's something that's been sitting, I wouldn't even call it in my back pocket. It wasn't on me. I had nothing with it. You know, 25 years ago, you got to go back on this one, which you'll appreciate. I wrote a book about the Orioles. It was a history of the Orioles, an oral history of the Orioles, from their inception in 1954 up to that point, which was about the turn of the century. And in doing that, in writing that book, which came out, it's a big, thick book. And there's never been another Oriole history, by the way. But in doing that, I went around the country interviewing pretty much everyone who'd ever done anything for the Orioles, the players, coaches, managers.
What's the time frame of this? So this was
2000.
90, you did 90, it in 2000. Okay.
Book came out in 2001. I did the interviews in 99, 25 years ago, and 2000.
Can I ask you this? Because I left the Sun in 92. I don't know what the tenor was in 99 or where your career was headed, but venerable columnist out on the beat, Ravens are about to win a championship. You didn't know that, but Billick was here. We had an NFL team back. Preakness was still the Preakness, and Cal was still playing at that time, right?
Right.
So all the legends were still alive at that point to be able to storytell Oriole baseball in the way that to give juice to your book. But also, was this a respite from the Sun? Was this a weekend project? Were you still beat writing? I'm sure you were, because I wrote the Peter Principles. This is when Angelos is losing his mind, and Bell and Albert Bell and Mike Hargrove. I mean, all that was going on at that time. Did you stop everything the way you do now? And
no.
Like, no.
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 No,
okay.
This was strictly a side gig. I didn't stop and just write books. I took a year off in like 2002 to write my book on Native Dancer, the horse. But until that point, and I think this was my third book, I've written 11. This was my third book. It was strictly on the side. I went around the country. I just folded it into my work routine. And at that point, I'm doing so much Orioles that it just felt natural. I went around interviewing everybody who'd ever done anything, pretty much. And I kept the tapes of these interviews, taped them on a little micro cassette recorder. I mean, this is like the Stone Age, you know, now a little micro cassette recorder with tapes, little micro cassettes. And so I transcribed them, and they became the focal point of this book, an oral history. But I had the tapes. I did nothing with them. I put them in a shoebox, put them in the closet, and went on to other things. For years, for two decades, I knew those tapes were sitting in there, But
on a second. I got to go back to 99. So I put together a book in 08, 09 that I never released, and I did sort of a similar thing. Mine was on Baltimore leadership. So I sat with Jim Irsay. I sat with anybody that had ever led anything in Baltimore sports where there was an angle. And I never wrote about it, but I have video of all of it, literally, that I've never really unleashed and released. But that's modern. In the old days, you're in 99 going to, I would think, spring training with the Orioles, maybe doing a road trip to somewhere in Texas with the Orioles or the Ravens or wherever you would go, Arizona, where people might live, right? Where these Orioles probably live in the southern part of the world, or even in Puerto Rico, Dominican, if you're sitting with them, right? Tell me your pathway that year, year and a half, where you're on vacation with your kids or kids then. Like, because I did this too with spring. I sat with Sam Perlaza, all sorts of people. I have it. I still have it. It's archived, and I never brought it out. I never put it on the air, but I have it. It's easy to find. Digital files, not what I have to do with Towson transfers. But for you to go back and find all this stuff, I'm thinking, like, who's alive? Who's dead? Where did you go? Did you talk to Merv Rettman? Did you talk to Terry Crowley? I'm just thinking of, like, all these lost people that like I haven't thought about in a long time. In addition to Brooks and Boog, which I'm sure you did all of that, I'm thinking about who else did you talk to that might be cool.
Well, in terms of trips, I went to Arizona in the fall, and I got three people in the fall. I got Eddie Murray, who I got Frank Robinson for 2 hours he was the president of the Arizona Fall League in 1999. He was between managing jobs, and I knew Frank. I had a good relationship with him. Not everybody did. And so I sat with him. I have it on tape. I've been listening to it. It's an interview, 2 hours, in which he's going over everything and talking about how, you know, he couldn't get housing in Baltimore. You know, it's pretty amazing stuff. He couldn't get housing in Baltimore. They really liked his wife applying for housing until they found out it wasn't Brooks Robinson's wife in 1969. And so I got Frank at an Arizona Fall League game. I got Eddie Murray, who was a coach at the Arizona Fall League and couldn't stand me and hadn't talked to me for years. And word had gotten around that I was going around interviewing everybody. And I mean, he was a coach for some team. And
you didn't expect to get him, did you?
I was very iffy. I got like 45 minutes to an hour of him telling me, I don't like you and I don't want to do this, but I have it. And he did talk about some stuff. He kind of, you know, Eddie has mellowed, and this was back in 99. It was pretty bad with the press, but I got him. And then I drove out into the countryside, and I got Harry Dalton who was living outside Phoenix in this beautiful home. And he went over Harry, of course, you know, an amazing figure in Oriole history. And he's there with the beginning of the franchise in 1954. It's an incredible story. So I got that. So that's one example. I went to Florida. I flew to Florida strictly to get Earl Weaver, who was at his golf club.
You found him at the golf club, right? Well, that's where I'm going to find him, right?
I drove to his house in the morning. We went and had breakfast. The whole thing happens over breakfast.
John, come on out to Miami Gardens. Come on out of here. I'm out in Miami.
Exactly. And, of course, we're driving to the club from his house. You know, it's like a gated community. He goes, well, how much are you going to pay me for this? I said, Earl, I'm not paying you a flipping penny. And he goes, And so anyway, so stories like that.
Tell these stories about Earl, and we're laughing. We're both smiling. I mean, this is what this is about, really, right?
It is. I got a lot of guys in Baltimore. I mean, you know, I mean, it all didn't happen in person. Some of it was on the phone. I don't have tapes of those. That's just too prehistoric. I don't have everybody on tape.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so, you know, but I mean, I have almost 40, I have 45 people on tape. And so it's a lot. I got Peter Angelos 2 hours on tape. Peter Angelos, of course, turned down every interview request from the Sun for years, hated the Sun and wouldn't do any of this stuff. So I interviewed Joe Foss, the president of the team at this time. And there's a million controversies going on with all the various stuff. With
him. Joe's still running. He's in the middle of it. I mean, I talked to Joe at length when I did the Peter Principles, but we're talking 15 years later, you know, like,
well, Joe was great.
He was in the sauce at that point, right?
Well, Joe was good. He was fine. He did a good job defending Peter, which I said, I'm going to put I had done it. I pretty much finished the manuscript. and of this book. And I said, you know, he's getting ripped here left and right, and by Brooks, by everybody. And I said, I'm a journalist. I need both sides of this story, and it's an oral history. It'll go in unvarnished. And he said, great, I'll talk to you. I'll take his side. I'll do it all. So we did it. And then I think he went to Peter and said, you know, you're going to look like a jerk because he's talked to everybody, even people who hate him. And
Larry Lucchino's not in the Hall of Fame this week. They both die a week apart. And we have to sit here and decide what's real journalism and what really happened, and that he saved the team for Baltimore, which is just not accurate.
Not true at all.
It's just not true.
No, they just signed a 30-year lease. But so anyway, he agreed to talk. Shocked me.
So was this pre-Cuba or post-Cuba? Because we're talking about the same period of time.
I think right around then, probably 2000. So when was Cuba? 99?
Cuba was
so.
25 years ago this week. Opening day, have Mike Flanagan's poster from Cuba. I went on the trip. I got my press credential hanging from it. And it hangs in my production office, right? And it says on it, Marzo 28, 1999. And I looked and I'm like, opening day, March 28th, 2024. I'm like, oh my God, it's exactly 20. It was 25 years. And on that day, Rubenstein took over the team. So it's 25 years. Did you
amazing.
Make the Cuba trip? You
nope.
did not. Now, Schmuck was on that trip, right?
Yep, Schmuck. I think Mike Litwin was on that trip. Maybe it was just Schmuck. I can't remember. I was not on the trip. Too bad. But, you know, Angelos, he talked to me. I have it on tape. He defends himself. Whatever. I just wanted it for balance. He was good. He was really good. I mean, we shared a bottle of wine. It's pretty funny to listen to. And so it went into the book. I have the tape. I have Mike Flanagan, by the way, 2 hours with Mike Flanagan talking about everything. So I have all these tapes, and I've done nothing with them for years. I went on, I wrote a bunch of books. I worked for worked for the Sun. I left the Sun. I worked for Comcast. I left Comcast. I worked for the Ravens. I left the Ravens. And I've just been sitting here wondering what to do with these tapes, if I was ever going to do anything, because the technology had expired, really. And so then, and you and I were talking before we went on here, I don't remember how I heard about Greg Landry, Italian transfers, but I did. I think it was you. And so I contacted Greg. Finally, last fall, I was decluttering. I'm at that point, decluttering. And I come across this shoebox with all these tapes. And I knew it was in there. And I said, you know, you need to do something with this. It really is time. These things, they've sat in here for so long that most of the people have died. And they are true. They are. It's the history of the team sitting in a shoebox in my closet. And you need to do something. So I went to Greg. I gave him a sort of feeling out process. I said, here's Earl Weaver. See if you can turn this into something. So he goes, and yeah, sure, no problem. Technological wizard turns my micro cassette into a digital file. You can listen to Earl, you know, ask me whether, you know, whether.
Have you thrown it to a transcribe yet? I'm a full shoot interview. Have you thrown it to a transcribe to get the transcription?
I have not done any of that yet. No,
John,
no.
We're going to have to talk off the air about that, because that's kind of some modern wizardry that I do with our stuff here, which within 2 minutes, you'll have full transcripts of everything that was said. Like,
that's
literally,
great. Well,
within
I do
2 minutes.
Need to do that.
Yeah.
But what I'm going to do, and this is my project, I really thought long and hard how to do this. And there's many ways to bring your material out in this crazy world we're living in now. And so Substack is a major platform, media platform. A lot of sports writers my age, you know, who have done their thing for many years and have an issue and no longer have a place to write, have done it. And if you have a following to some degree or something you want to do and you can promote it, it's a good place for you. And the audio functionality is really good. So I said, all right, I'm going to do this myself. I'm going to create a Substack and I'm going to call it The Bird Tapes. It's basically a franchise. And I'm going to roll these things out. I'm going to basically explore oral history built around this archive of tapes that I have. And I'm going to do some writing myself and help people understand some of these guys. Paul Richards, you know, just a foundational Oriole. I don't have him on tape, but I have a lot of people. He died. He had died.
Did Luis talk to you?
Who?
Luis.
Oh, no, I did not get Luis.
See, I mean, Dick Gordon controlled a lot of these guys. I did the last interview ever with Earl without realizing it when they did the statues because I lived upstairs at Harbor Court and Dick said, "Hey, Earl wants to talk to you." And Earl's like, "I'll give you 10 minutes." 45 minutes later, you know, I've got Earl talking about Elmira and, you know, just all sorts of things. But it's a wonderful piece of my story that I would never want lost. I would always want anybody that wants to go click on that Earl Weaver piece to be able to see it out on YouTube. It's available at Baltimore Positive. That's what I've done at Baltimore Positive, is taking all these archival things and thrown it together. I'm just so thrilled that what was lost in gold, as they would say, gold, Jerry, gold, that's lost in your closet in a case comes out for the world to share, because I think there'll be a lot of people that will dedicate a lot of time to doing this. And I know that for a fact from writing Peter Principles. And sometimes you feel like you're doing this stuff and then the real reward is getting the work done, but also the feedback of like that period that'll never come back again. You know, that you caught, you captured really the height of the Oriole magic, right? As we would look at it a quarter of a century later, that there hadn't been much to write home about the last quarter of a century. And I've chronicled some of that, sadly. Hope it's about to change. But at that point, there was a hell of a story to tell about that franchise over 40 years. I mean, really.
Unbelievable. And a number of eras. And I have the most recent era. I have Mike Messina. You know, this is before he was a Yankee. I have Cal Jr. when he's still playing. And his interview, I have to say, I mean, and he's through the streak at that point. And that was sort of talked out almost. But his depiction of growing up and with his dad and what the Orioles were then. And he's a first person witness to spring training in the 60s when, you know, spring training consisted of Cal Sr. would, you know, slap a decal on the station wagon and drive down to the stadium, get the bats, put them in the back and just start driving to Florida. You know, that was how they set up for spring training.
And Cal's 7 years old and Billy's 4 years old. And there's Terry Crowley at the cage and Mark Belanger and Jim Palmer. Yeah. Like, I would never think to talk to Jim Palmer about, when's the first time you looked at Cal Ripken? He probably would say, I stared into his eyes when he was a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know, if I had to think about it. You know, Cal Sr. had his little blue eyes in a station wagon when he was hitting me fungos in the outfield in Miami when Jim was 23 or something, right? Like, literally, they would have that. That's the familial part of the Orioles that the Angelos thing really broke over 30 years. And you came into Brooks was pissed at that point, right? Brooks was the fantasy camp and all that. John Eisenberg is here. I just want to like give you full love on what you're doing at Substack, and you can follow John everywhere. John, I am thrilled you're doing this because I had all of these rock star interviews from back in the 80s with David Bowie and Robert Plant, all these Hall of Famers. And when my wife got sick, they're all in little microtapes. I literally took it to her bedside and transferred it. Now we have Greg Landry, who is helping me with my documentary, you with this thing. It's really an amazing archival thing that we were, as journalist, witness to all of this history. And if we don't capture it off of these crazy little tapes, it'll just be gone. You know what I mean? And I think certainly for the Orioles part of it, with the new owner coming in, and they're already rewriting the history of Peter saved the franchise. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's Pravda ridiculous, but there's the real history of what really happened in period pieces. And I only bring up my rock and roll tapes because I can think of two. I interviewed Clarence Clemens when he had like broken up with E Street, you know, way different time than the way it ended, right? I interviewed Tommy Shaw from Styx when he was sideways with Styx and in bad, in Damn Yankees with, you know, it's amazing how the period of time and when you find people in places, how the statues and the softening, and to your point, even Eddie Murray, who's still alive and well and with us, might have a different take on it 25 years later. But to capture that piece, it's gone in your basement if you don't bring it back out. So I'm thrilled that I'm going to be able to listen to it, especially the Mike Flanagan thing.
Mike Flanagan, really quite an interview. And well, a couple of things. Number one, I did I paused a little bit before I started this. I wanted to make sure I was respectful of the families of everybody. You know, a lot of these people have passed away, and I gave it a lot of thought and talked to people, when I talked to John Maroon, talked to some other people. Well, what do you think about this? I'm going to bring out how will the families feel? And he said, John, who knew them all, and of course ran the Orioles, you know, PR for years, and said that, he says, you are fine. As a matter of fact, how soon can you get them out? The people will love this. People will love this. You need to go full speed ahead, which I appreciated from John. And I heard that from some other people too around town. And so there may be a couple that I'm careful about. And certainly if anyone told me something, it's on tape. This is off the record. And Earl Weaver was off the record on a few things. I'll edit it out. You can now do that easily. So fair is fair. So I did do that. I will be doing that. But it's pretty much unvarnished. It's going to go out. And, pause for an ad here. It is birdtapes.substack.com. That's where you find it. Bird Tapes is one word. And so it's there. And I'm going to roll these things out slowly but surely. I'm going to do some written stuff myself bolster it all and just have some fun with it and try to teach people about history. I mean, when I got here in 1984, the Orioles had won the World Series the year before. And I was just sort of shocked. Brooks is in the media. He's in the press box. You know, you're sitting there eating a hot dog at Memorial Stadium. He sits down with you and he's just in the media. And so got to know him pretty well there. And he copy edited the book, by the way. He copy edited the book that came out in 2001, which is a whole nother story. But the Orioles were like a family. It was
you
like
you can't
a family.
Just say that on this show and just drop that and think that, right. Like, I'm not going to have you at Fadley's for a crab cake this summer and say, all right, let's go back to this Brooks thing again, you know?
Okay. Well, what happened was,
you know, I'm doing my 25th anniversary documentary. I'm trying to find little things. There was a point where Brooks said to me the first time he met me to loosen me up, he said, how about I come back every night? We do the Brooks and Nasty show. Wouldn't that be something? And I'm like, perfect. How is that not going in my documentary? You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. Oh, well, Brooks was just so great. So I interviewed him twice. I interviewed him in 1999. I interviewed him in 2000. And at the end of the second one, he, and I don't have this on the tape, unfortunately, he goes, you know, that was great. I really enjoyed it. You got a lot of people. He said, you know, I think I know everyone who ever played for the Orioles. And I said, well, that may be true. He said, I got here, not the guys in 54, because I got here in 55, but I think I know everyone. And so how about if when you're done with this manuscript.
People think it's like, now, Ray Lewis might have been able to say that for a little while here, you know, until he sort of disappeared in, you know, the last 10 years. But like, you know, it really is amazing that these institutions have memory. The Baltimore Colts have a memory and a soul here too, right? For anyone that remembers.
Yeah,
but this
sure.
Oriole thing has been so soured by the last 30 years in so many ways. I mean, it's the beautiful. And at some point, I will rebound you out of this book into, that was Cal Ripken on the field as an owner of the team last week, John.
I know.
Peter's dead. There's a new owner since the last, like, you and I have never known a post Castro world of Cuba or a post Russian world of Putin. I don't know what this is, but Cal's a part of it. And I know you're jumping in at this point. Brooks is gone. Earl is gone. Jim is still here and feisty from what I saw on the rain delay on Wednesday night too, which I liked feisty Jim. I like him. I like Jim watching good baseball for the first time in 30 years on television. It's
That's
awesome.
Great.
And I love Ben.
I love it when they had Grant Hill on the other night on the show and he immediately said, who are you going to extend? You know, which is the whole story. Thank you, Jim.
All right. So I let's pivot a little bit because I'll have you back with the tapes and I'll have you on every time you release something. And I'll probably wind up helping you even more now that you'll understand what transcription is. And in about 15 minutes, we get off the thing. You're going to be like, oh, okay, cool. So nonetheless, modern, bring me through your head. I think the last time you were on with me was maybe 60 days ago after the Ravens got eliminated and you told me you were on to this project. And we literally were discussing the concept that the Angelos family wouldn't be here. And maybe somewhere along the line, I was pretty wise in saying, this is all going to happen real quick. Once it happens, it's going to be and it feels like it happened really quick. And here we are. And it feels like these guys don't really know what they're doing. And I thought they would have an installation team because they're billionaires. I think this is a dude who's a fan and bought the team and is going to figure out Greg Bader and TJ Brightman and, you know, knows the baseball team's fine and figuring out ticket sales and the business and these crazy baseball partners and the ownership. Because I think he's really, really new and green to the thing. And I just love that Louis Aparicio was his favorite player. That's my favorite part of the whole thing.
Yeah, no, it's it really is. There should be a parade every day because it's fantastic. It's just fantastic. And I preside over a family of serious Oriole fans and their extended family. And so I just look at how they are and knowledgeable fans, and they're all just like, oh my God, I just can't believe this happened. And what happened was, the reason it happened quickly is who bought the team. Rubenstein, there's a reason why. I mean, he should be vetting the MLB owners, not the other way around. They're vetting him. They're vetting him. He should be like, well, who am I going into business with here? And so
Have
anyway,
you seen the Oakland A's?
yeah.
They're a partner. You
I mean, he
know,
should be betting.
my wife, God bless her, I was going to run for mayor of Baltimore at one point, and you know I was serious, and everybody that knows me knows I was really serious. I wasn't playing games, and we would drive literally through the worst parts of town, and my wife would say, "You get to be the mayor of this too." And
Yeah.
that was her way of saying, "Hey, man, that I had Citizen X in my passenger seat of the car or the driver's seat in some cases." And I said, "And I'm thinking, yeah, you bought into this. Peter bought in running Raging Bull, and Reinsdorf met him at the front, and Selig met him at the front. And they're like, no, they're the enemy. You're not on that. You're not with Cal Ripken. You're against him." Wah,
Yep.
wah, wah. And the next thing you know, there's a strike, and 30 years later, they can't figure out television money. And they have a litigious partner that just buried. Like, it's crazy. He's entering this club, to your point, and the game's not in good shape in that way with regional revenue and trying to figure things out. It's ripe for a genius to figure out how the Birdland Club exists and how they get the revenue they need for us to get what we need as consumers, because certainly he has found a very, very broken franchise in a lot of ways. And I told his PR guy that. I'm like, you have no idea how terrorized and traumatized we are. I mean, John, you've said the words Mike and Flanagan to me in this conversation three or four times in this, and whenever that comes up, I'm traumatized by it. So I would, not to mention my media pass. So they have a lot of things that they don't know what they're into, including just the fact that lacrosse is played here and it's a generation later, and they got a lot of work to do. They really do.
They do. They definitely do. And the fact that the team is on sound footing, the organization is on sound footing on the field, is just a huge thing because I think you and I talked about this the last time I was on. The most important thing is the team is winning or losing. And that was the biggest problem here was this losing for so long. And so it's really as simple as that. Sometimes it gets a little complicated. You have a winning product. And you don't just alienate everybody, which hopefully you wouldn't when you're winning, then you've got something. And so they have a nice team here and young players, and they're going to have to foul it up for it not to go much better going forward because they've done a lot, and I will give the prior regime credit for setting that up pretty well, staying out of the way for once, and doing a lot of things with the on-field product, staying out of the way, period. And so they have that, but and is there a ton of work? Is there work to do? There's a ton of work to do, but I think we're in the hands of a very sort of mature business. I mean, what a group of people! I mean, Mike Bloomberg's in it, and Grant Hill, and Cal, and these
Kurt
people with
Schmoke.
more schmuck, tons of money, and influence. Just it's like wow, it's almost like it's like okay, we're gonna hold our hands together here and. We're sort of committed to giving this to the city of Baltimore because they deserve it. It's like, did that actually happen? I just can't believe it. So
I've
it's a
had some
great.
pinch me moments. I must
Yeah.
admit. Well, I told Mr. Rubenstein's representative, I gave him a hug after an hour-long conversation in the third and fourth inning on the club level, and I said, "No one has ever been nice to me here,
Yeah.
ever. And like, I can't remember the last time anybody was nice to me." Bill Stecha, I'll give him a pass. Now that Mr. Angelos is gone, I can say that Bill Stecha has always returned my calls. But like, literally, I've been waiting for this. I led Free the Birds for this. I bought an orange jersey, and like I went to Sarasota a couple weeks ago. I even talked to Mike Elias down in Fort Myers. Cute ballpark they have down there. John, I
Wonderful.
can't think of a next 15 years of spending a week or two in Sarasota every year. And I have found a hot yoga studio down there. I've got a great Amish market. I can go and have some fried chicken. So like, I'm ready to be, I'm ready. I got a shovel. Let's lift it. But, and I just think we've had this philosophy here for so long that I'm always going to, I'm going to steal your line, dude. There should be a parade every day because I do feel that way, but I'm waiting for the signs of life. And I do feel like the team's going to be good, right? And I'll get to the Norfolk box score with you in a minute. But the team's going to be good. What do you want to see done now that they're in? Now that you've seen Cal wave and all of this, what signs of life as a fan? I mean, they had this long rain delay the other day. Luke and I went through that and giving free tickets out and whatever. But what will let you know that there's more interest than just you, me, and Wick and the people that love baseball?
Well, the first thing, let's see some of these guys. I can't get beyond extend. You got this young talent. They want to, you know, answer the questions of the fans, the concerns of the fans. Sign them, extend them, invest in them, invest in what you've done here. Start with Rutschman, the catcher. He's 26, ripe for. I think Gunnar Henderson at 22 with Scott Boras as his agent. That's going to be tough, but I think you can get Ellie Rutschman signed. Get some of these other young guys signed, you know, invest some money in the team. I mean, what was the story that came out? It was just this week. The Orioles operating profit. Do I have this right? Operating profit number one in the league? Something like that. There's
now
a
that
story that
should not shock anybody that they burned the thing to the ground, right? Like Janet Marie was on this week before Larry passed, right? And God, we could talk about, you and I could do three crab cakes just on Larry, right? But because you knew him and I knew him a little, but Sarasota needs a coat of paint. It hadn't been painted in 15. Like literally this beautiful ballpark, Janet Marie, it's getting baked in the paint. The greens are off green and like all of that's happening. And all of it was just left for the next owner and they were milking money out of it. John, I did the math on this and I don't listen. Mr. Angelo's just passed and John's sitting in the Virgin Islands somewhere having a good time counting his money. $1.7 billion, and I did all of this for the damage that was done for the city and all the hurt feelings of everybody and whatever trauma there would be. I did the math. They own the team for about 1,650 weeks, give or take. They made $1.7 billion on this. They made $1 million a week every week they own the team in the end, plus all the profit they took. To your point, they probably took $100 million in profit last year. Like they were, you know, right? So
it's quantified. I mean, this is, I can't remember who reported it, but number one in the league, more than the Dodgers or the, of course, these teams that have spent money. But number one in the league in operating profit. So there's something there. There's something there. There's money there to sign these guys and do what the Atlanta Braves are doing. And, you know, you got this young talent. That is, I mean, when Machado walked out the door, I thought, you know, if I had still had 700 words to burn somewhere, at some publication, I was at the Ravens, but I couldn't. I said, why are you in the business of baseball? You have done what you're supposed to do, and you've developed a superstar, fantastic player. You could build around him forever. Why are we not paying him? I mean, why? If you can't, if it's too much for you, then why are you in the business of baseball? And so that just went unanswered. And so now you got a new group and you got guys in the same situation, you got infinitely more guys to sign. Do it, start doing that. And I'm not just saying, open the vault, write a check. I understand there's a science to it and you have to be smart about it. But that's the sign of life that I want to see. And believe me, I speak for everybody. We got Adley Rutschman here. Sign him, extend him. He does four things, 20 things a game. There's a reason why the team is winning. And so sign him, don't go on to tell the New York Times that your first goal is to make sure the concerts are good. You got good players. Sign your players. That's the first sign of life that I want to see.
See, I got to spank you now because you're being the guy bringing up the old regime in ways that like they're gone. It's going to be really hard to think of it that way though, right? Because we really didn't think I said this to you and everybody the last 90 days. Like, I never spoke to my wife, my child, anybody in my life. Like, one day he'll be gone and they'll be gone and we'll have a new thing. I only have one or two people in my life that ever convinced me that that was ever going to happen, that if I lived long enough, I'd see it. And here we are. And I'm so excited to put the jersey back on and watch it and see maybe how the broadcasts aren't so Pravda. You know, take the gloves off at Jim and let the broadcast need to be fun because it's how I consume 92% of it, right? It needs to be available everywhere because I go places and
That's
I do
another
things,
thing.
You know? Yeah, they need to get their business right, their marketing right, their communications right, their friendships right, their
Sure.
relationships, their business. It's going to take, John, you could say just go sign all these. That's cool. What is the payroll going to be? To your point, are we going to be poor mouthing bottom 10? Are we going to compete? I don't say we're going to spend what the Dodgers or the Yankees are going to spend, but I'd like to think that they could spend somewhere between 8 and 12 in regard to, you know, from payroll, maybe spend 150 million to 180 million a year. But that being said, they can't have 600 people at the ballpark either. They, you know, a $9 this to get in. I mean, the $15 beers, the suites, the club sales, the sponsorships, all of that needs to grow to support the team that you're talking about.
Sure.
To some degree.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, there's a whole business side thing, and certainly the accessibility on television. That's a big one. People need to be able to see it. They got to get that side of it figured out. I mean, there's countless things to make rooting for the team easier and more fun. You know, that goes hand in hand. And there's a lot to be done. And hopefully there's a checklist and just start going.
Well, they got the squirt zone. Anything you want to say on the Norfolk box score? You want to do anything current at all as they go to Pittsburgh for more rain and Burns is an ace and like I the bats went cold, the bats were hot. Like but all that being said, my God, you have chronicled this for 40 years. I have witnessed this for 50 years. From the very beginning of Coggins and Bunbury and my dad talking to me when I was 4 years old about those guys being rookies of the year and how are we going to make room? And we got Don Baylor and, oh my God, Paul Blair, we can't get rid of him. And like, I go back to all of that and every can't miss Jim Fuller and Drungo Hazewood and Ken Gerhardt. And like, you know, I had John Habian's wife on 2 weeks ago. So like, I, you know, I got the history of all of this. I've never seen anything like this. And this cursed that with 10 RBIs and they can't find room for Holiday. And what are they going to do with Mayo? And it's, you know, hold the Mayo. And what is happening, man?
Well, that Norfolk team, that really is incredible. They've got it is truly an embarrassment of riches. And yeah, they're facing AAA pitching. But it's a little tough to watch that when the bats go cold up here and you got Ryan O'Hearn in right field and Tony Kemp at second base. Or, you know, it's like, how is this happening when you got these other guys knocking on the door? But I have to believe soon enough this will be addressed. It's an interesting inflection point, I think, for the on-field product for Elias and all those guys, because what they've done this year is basically run back the team that won 101 games. Good for them. They were loyal to the veterans. You know, Urias, Mateo, O'Hearn, all these guys. Meanwhile, they got unbelievable generation of talent that is not just knocking on the door. They're just slamming the door. And pretty soon you're going to have to do something with these guys. I mean, Connor Norby, who nobody ever even talks about, has done all he needs to do at AAA. He's a major league player. And he's a total major league player.
They got five guys that would be on the field in five different organizations just across the sport, right?
So they got to figure that out, and they're smart guys, and it'll be interesting to see what happens here. If this this incumbent outfield generation, they're great. Austin Hayes was in the All-Star game last year. Cedric Mullins is like the heart of the team. Santander is a power hitter, the best power hitter, 30 RBIs. You know, they're all hitting below 200 right now. You got to wait it out, but they got these guys that are coming. I mean, and not just coming. I mean, they are really, really dangerous. And so at some point, they have to make a decision. And you have to hope they're smart enough to figure out a way to do that.
I see you and me with big pretzels and ice cold beer and peanuts with our feet up, sandals on. second week of spring training next year, you know, waiting for them to hang the bunting for the World Series championship of the Baby Birds with three Orioles under contract and Burns with the Cy Young. Let me dream a little bit, John. You know what I mean? Just a little bit,
Fair enough. Fair enough. I think a lot of people will ride along on that one.
If Wild Bill were here right now, he'd say, give me an O, is what he would say. John right. Eisenberg has chronicled the history of Oriole baseball. He's bringing it back to life on Substack. You can follow him at on social media. Shout out. And as my dad would say, a gold star to Greg Landry over at Towson Transfers for bringing the stuff to life, as he has brought my documentary to life as well. So we'll all get together for a crab cake over at Pappas in Parkville and celebrate all of that. John, the book, too. Tell everybody about the book, because Father's Day is coming up and all that, too. Not just the book, a bunch of books, but certainly if you love the Lamar story, you'll love your book.
Yeah, Rocket Men, my story, the history of the black quarterbacks in pro football, is my most recent book. I spent the fall through the Super Bowl really promoting it. That is ongoing. I'll be at the Annapolis Book Festival on April 27th. I will be at the Gaithersburg Book Festival, actually on Preakness Saturday. So
that sounds so sophisticated, a book festival. You know, I've done a few in my day, and I feel like, am I qualified to attend a book festival?
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Am I an author?
Yeah, they're great. They're a lot of fun. And the paperback version will be out in the fall. And so
I love smart people. You know, I don't want to. Yeah. I'm not trying to get elected. You know, I love the uneducated. I love the educated. Can I say that?
Right.
Book festivals are good for the educated. So that's good. Yes, we need more of those.
But I will. And I appreciate the platform here. Yes, the Bird Tapes thing is the thing I just kicked off. Birdtapes.substack.com. And they make it really good. There's an app and a Substack app, and it's a really pretty interesting writer's environment that you can get into a lot of different people, and a cool thing.
Well, anything that brings Brooks Robinson and Mike Flanagan and Earl Weaver back to life in bringing it into context of, like, not reading about it, actually hearing their voices, I think it'll be cool. And never before heard the lost tapes, the Bird Tapes of John Eisenberg. We're going to get the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. We're at Costas on Tuesday. We are at Fadley's every Friday that the Orioles are home, live from 2 until 5. Come on down. Don't feed me any beer or anything to drink, because I'm not going to have time to pee. It's live radio. Walking a tightrope like I did that week in February. Why? Because I'm ambitious. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore. Positive.